expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Should be in Hollywood. Just a second there, I thought I saw something. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool in here thinks he's got anything to prove. Lot of water under the bridge, lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. Used to care, but things have changed. Trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some days are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with a losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. I just don't show it. You can hurt someone, not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman who don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in late. I'm not that eager to make that mistake. Some people are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 2nd of April, 2018. It's a Monday. You're tuned in to the Oh, boy, it's just confusing. You are tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio, so about 5 minutes after 8 a.m. Arizona time. Going to continue our block of instruction on insurgency today. Thanks for taking the time to tune in to Liberty Tree Radio. As always, we're sending this show out for Lily Grace Antoinette. A couple of administrative tasks to try to complete here. Bob Miner, and I'm not going to go into that too much, did about 30 minutes on that last Friday on the micro effect. If you'd like to call Bob, leave him a short message of some words of encouragement and all that him and his family is going through. Telephone is 701-251-2365. 701-251-2365. There'll be a message there, and it asks if you'd like to speak to him directly or if you'd like to purchase a phone card, and then it'll ask you to key in the first three digits of his last name, and that's M-I-N, translates out to 646, and you'll have about 7 to 10 seconds to say, hey, Bob, thinking about you, hang in there. It's not looking real good. I got some questions of about doling out sentences and alleged crimes on all that part. We'll get to that up here in a bit when we have a couple of deals about border news about what's going on and ask questions of about, that doesn't quite make sense. How is it this way, but it's different on that way? If you'd like to send Bob a letter, it's SCCC 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. As I guess you could put in Bob Miner care of, or however you're going to make sure that it gets routed to him directly. It's SCCC, so phonetically that would be Sierra Charlie Charlie, 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. If you'd like to help out Stephanie and the family, what's going on, the Miner family, and that's, again, it's spelled M-I-N-E-R, 7607 95th Street Southeast, Forbes, North Dakota, 58439. Miner family, 7607 95th Street Southeast, Forbes, F-O-R-B-E-S, North Dakota, 58439. We're talking to somebody the other day and have some things going on. I know that North Dakota is fairly sparsely populated, trying to rally some help up there for Bob, trying to tie in two or three loose ends right now. Well, if you're up there and you'd like to help out, need some people that are there and familiar with the terrain and the population concentrations and stuff, contact me. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. Phonetically, that would be Alpha Lima Tango Hotel Alpha Bravo Echo Bravo 762@hotmail.com. I've been in contact with a few people up there. Listeners to your mind as your primary weapon. And I'll be able to make contact with you and try to figure out what's going on. The border news have more than 20 items of those issues. Also, kind of another sideline of it, and I guess this would be more applicable to the people that live in Arizona, or if you may be traveling and come through, is the Arizona Military Museum. It's around, well, it's at the State National Guard Armory at 52nd Street and McDowell. Actually, it's on McDowell, just east of 52nd Street. And free admission, it's gotten quite a few awards of the best military museum in the whole state. Now, of course, Pima Air Museum, they got bunches of airplanes and stuff, so it may be larger, but as the name implies, it's mostly geared towards just aircraft. It's an Arizona Military Museum. It's in the oldest, continuously largest, or however what designation it is, of an adobe building in the state of Arizona. Seems to me it was right around the same place where they had the German POWs during World War II. And that's a whole other different story. Somehow they had gotten a hold of a map and they saw that it said on there the Salt River, so they assumed that there would be water in it, but this is the desert and it's just the water course except certain times of the year. So they had tunneled out of their prisoner of war camp and had made rafts out of raincoats and things, thinking that they could get in the Salt River and sail away. And, well, when they got there, there wasn't a whole lot of water in the river. But anyway, the Arizona Military Museum, a lot of people have a misconception thinking that Arizona history has to do with cowboys and Indians, but it does go all the way back to the Spanish conquistadors, seven cities of Cibola, and setting up these presidios around. And then there's the part of about the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, current war on terrorism, quite a bit of display of about the Vietnam War, have a Huey helicopter in there, the real thing, not some replica, and I guess it's a Soviet four-barreled ZPU anti-aircraft gun, 23 millimeter, and all kinds of pertinent history. There's also the specific things of about a group of, well, it started off before actually the National Guard was the National Guard in the late 1800s. And infantry divisions, combat regiments, is called the Bushmasters. They've gone through a lot of transitions over the years. They've got a lot of distinguished awards during World War II. They had left here after training in Arizona and then went to Louisiana. And all the run-ups of training and evaluation that was going on in the East, and then they had gone down to the Philippines for jungle training, and then went to Australia, and then made their way around several of the islands in there, and that part of it. So it's a big part of Arizona history. And then they transitioned into the artillery in the 1970s, 1980s, and then they traded in their howitzers for infantry-type weapons, and they've been deployed to Afghanistan, so have a long history of events concerning the Arizona military, obviously in the Arizona Military Museum. So if you go there, you go up through the main gate, it's north of McDowell, and just tell the people there at the gate, checking IDs, that where you're going, and drive down to the military museum. Free admission. Of course, if you have a contribution to help out in the cost of running the museum, they're always greatly accepted. Quite a few books that have been weeded out of the library are for sale there. Anything from personal I've been there books and military manuals and FMs and things like that. So it's a good place to go. Get a little bit of education on what all Arizona's all about and everything like that. The broadcast schedule, as it stands right now, still on Liberty Tree Radio from 8 to 9 a.m. on Monday. And Tuesday and Wednesday, Jeffrey Bennett had asked me to sit in because he's trying to get his house ready for sale. So I'll be on the Micro Effect from 10 to noon Arizona time. And that should only be lasting here only for another week or so. He had asked me back in, was that the 20th of February, to hold down his two-hour blocks and for a month. And I contacted him. I think that started on the 20th of February. So we went up to the 20th of March, contacted him, and he said that he still needed a little bit more time, a couple more weeks. So, you know, I'm trying to do my best to hold that down. But, and then also on Thursday and Friday on the Micro Effect from 8 to 10 at the usual time. It's kind of odd too because trying to juggle three different segments on two different networks at three different time frames. And this broadcast here on Liberty Tree Radio be lasting at least until next January. So have the Thursday and Friday segment or the people that have been listening to Your Mind as Your Primary Weapon for years now and picked up this segment here on Liberty Tree Radio, trying to work it in to bring the novice readers, listeners, into what we're trying to achieve here, and then have a third block of the people that, being that they might not have listened to Your Mind as Your Primary Weapon on the Micro Effect. And so I got three different small, medium, large, however it is, mild, low, medium, and hot, or however you'd like to say that, first graders, second graders, and third graders, 101, 201, 301 type. So it's kind of difficult to try to run these things all at the same time, and you have these people that when I say something on Thursday and Friday that they understand points that I'm trying to make, and then come on Monday and talk about some of these issues and remind myself that I can't go so fast because I'm talking to people that might just have recently been exposed to some of this information. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. Now, the things that I try to cover on Your Mind as Your Primary Weapon, the main part of it is about insurgency and what it is, who it is, how it's done. And the word insurgency, the base word is insurge, I-N-S-U-R-G-E-R-E. It's Latin, and in the participle, it means to rise up. Sometimes it's been referred to as the war of the weak against the strong. Try to achieve on Your Mind as Your Primary Weapon the education, the strategy, the tactics, the training, the leadership, the planning, the intelligence, the financing, the field sanitation, the organization, the security, the communications, the medical, the after-action review, shoot, move, communicate, medical, NBC, tracking, training, intelligence, insurgency, field sanitation, and all those parts. So it's not that I just sit here and drone on and on about what happened 50 years ago in some far-off land, that all these things do interlock together. And the old part of about trying to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, as we know, that doesn't work. Also, one of the listeners, Ted, has a podcast, and I'm going to try to make absolutely sure, but to the best of my knowledge, it's A Stranger in My Own Land. And if you just type that into a search engine, and it should pop up. It did a recorded podcast last Wednesday, and initially it started off in just going to do an hour, and we blew right through that and got up to about an hour and 55 minutes or so. It asked me to come back up, and I know that has been posted on there. So I'd like to say thanks for Ted for listening and to see the importance of trying to iron these things out, as he had been discussing parts of about guerrilla warfare and insurgency on his broadcast. And I guess one morning he had been listening to the Intel report with Mark and Don and had left the computer on, or however he listens. And then I started in on your mind as your primary weapon. So he listened, liked what he heard, contacted me, and as they say, the rest is history. One of the things that we do cover, try to, and sometimes I understand it might be a little confusing, that you have under the top category of warfare, then you have what sometimes has been referred to as low-intensity, mid-intensity, and high-intensity conflict. Low-intensity conflict sometimes been referred to as insurrection or guerrilla war, but a more appropriate definition would be insurgency, because guerrilla war is not just guerrilla war. It's the guerrilla aspect, the guerrilla operations are a portion of insurgency. First, last, and always, you have to have the political dissidents, the subversives that raise the awareness amongst the people, organize, develop the leadership and their cause, and get the mass of the people behind them for change to rise up. And then another component of insurgency is the guerrillas, and another component are the terrorist activities. Now, clearly, the American people, through the government and the news media, have led the American people to the conclusion that the insurgent is some guy with a beard and a turban yelling Allah Akbar over in the Middle East, and that couldn't be any further from the truth. Now, either they're unaware of what they're talking about, or they're purposely deceiving the American people on what all this insurgency stuff is. So to try to fill in those blank spots and bridge over from where we are to where we need to be. And also, oh, and I mentioned the three main components. There's other parts. There's the undergrounds and the auxiliaries. But usually they'll fall under one of those three sections of the political subversives, the terrorist activity, and the guerrilla operations. And there seems to also be a misconception amongst certain groups that that they don't want to be concerned with the political activism, the political subversion. And part of that is what you're listening to now and on other broadcasts on Liberty Tree Radio and the Micro Effect, of to raise the awareness of the situation of what's going on. And the political subversives have to exist first before any of the rest of the components of insurgency has a chance of succeeding. There's one thing to go out and try to become a guerrilla fighter, but without a cause and the mass support of the people, you're nothing more than a bandit. And usually you're quickly shunned by the population, and your cause dies on the vine, a slow, painful death. Because obviously the government and the insurgents are both competing for that broad sea of people that are the strategic terrain in an insurgency. They're both competing for that, and who can get there firstest with the mostest, have the best cause, they usually have the best chance of succeeding in an insurgency. One of the things that I try to dispel some of the misconceptions also, we frequently hear people throwing around the word intel. Oh, I got some intel on this, or I got some intel on that, and oh, one of my members, they were driving through so-and-so, and there was a group of military vehicles parked at some truck stop or a roadside rest area, and this, or they were sitting at a railroad crossing and they saw a train going by and it had military vehicles on that, and they try to label that as intelligence. And truly, actually, all that is a piece of information, as the intelligence cycle generally runs on four components. It's direction, collection, analyzation, and dissemination. Now, clearly, you could happen to be at the right place at the right time and find a little piece of information, but generally, the leader gets together with his senior intelligence officer and sketches out their PIR, their priority of intelligence requirements, or their EEI, essential elements of information, and send teams out to go collect specific pieces of information. When those teams come back and they are debriefed, oftentimes that leads to other questions that need follow-up. But that's the direction part, and then the collection of those EEI, PIR. And then after that information is directed and collected, then it needs to be analyzed, compiled, and compared with other pieces of information. And then and only then does information get translated into intelligence. And with those first three parts, the direction, collection, and analyzation, it does no good unless the information is disseminated. So I often hear people throwing around terms. Oh, well, we were up at the Bundy Ranch and we got some intel. Oh, we got over here and there was some intel. And that's really incorrect representation of information. So as I go through, and also there's two components on this insurgency stuff. There's the insurgents, and then there's the government security forces that are waging counter-revolution against the insurgents. Sometimes it's been referred to as counter-insurgency, abbreviated COIN, like a coin, like a quarter or a nickel, a dime. And there are certain issues with the very use of the term counter-insurgency, because it conjures up in the mind that the government security forces are waiting for the insurgents to act so they can react to the actions of the insurgents. And in order to defeat an insurgent movement, the government cannot wait for the insurgents to act. They have to get out ahead of the actions of the insurgent group. And also, as sometimes as I go through these case studies of insurgent movements throughout the world, going back at least 100 years, on why were some successful, some were unsuccessful. And then also then we get into the next component, and it's finally occurring to the movers and shakers in this country that the drug cartels, and not just in Mexico, but in Colombia, El Salvador, Guatemala, Peru, that they are a hybrid type of insurgent, sometimes referred to as criminal insurgencies. And the problem is when the powers that be try to label these groups as drug trafficking organizations, DTOs, or international criminal organizations, that it conjures up the mindset that it can be handled by the police. And the police certainly aren't outfitted to, you know, they go after bank robbers and shoplifters and drunk drivers, but they have absolutely not the skill, the ability, or the equipment to address an insurgent movement, hence what we witnessed back on May 1st, 2015, where the CJNG is out there shooting down helicopters with RPGs and creating general mayhem in Mexico. And of course, we didn't hear anything about that on the mainstream media. They were too busy talking about a Mohammed cartoon contest and Bruce Jenner's sex change operation and just distracting the people. So the reason I describe these parts of it is because there seems to be a percentage of the patriot movement, the militia, that like to come down to the southern border and do their part of trying to secure their border. But oftentimes it appears that they're totally unaware of what they're getting themselves into, totally unprepared when it comes to leadership, planning, training, field sanitation, organization, security, communications, etc., etc. And so to help develop a better understanding of about what's going on in the area of where you plan to be operating, it certainly would be beneficial to understand the parts of about what cartels that you may encounter, who runs that turf, that gang warfare type operation, what are their tactics, how are things changing, because things change out here hourly, weekly, monthly. We'll be right back. It's the bottom of the hour here. It's no fun being an illegal alien.
I'm not on the door.
Well, it's no fun being an illegal alien. Good morning, this is Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 2nd of April, 2018. It's a Monday. You're tuned in to the Liberty Tree Radio, and it's about 8:40-ish in the morning, Arizona time, Pacific time here. The first 30 minutes of today's broadcast, we talked about our administrative aspects, about Bob Miner, his plight, contact information. I started to explain little parts and pieces that differentiate between insurgency and counterinsurgency. I use the term counterinsurgency sparingly, but since most people are familiar with that overused, misapplied term, but they have heard it, and so we'll stick with it. But like I said before, there are certain issues of about the very application of that term. We've also discussed the part of about the intelligence cycle. That's one of the things that I try to do here on Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon, of about explaining how these parts and pieces all fit together like parts of a puzzle. And as I give you the information of what's going on, and maybe some of it will apply to what's going on in Colombia, and you go, well, I live in New Hampshire, so what does that have to do with me? It's a border thing. Well, that's being pretty naive, but that's what we do on Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon, to present to you the information so it can be compiled in a binder or in your mind of all the interworking parts of about these insurgent groups that are happening and occurring and transpiring south of the border, because it's not just a border thing. It doesn't just concern California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. It affects pretty much the whole United States. The cartels and their affiliates have established themselves in 1,000 U.S. cities. Now, there's a new 2017 National Drug Threat Assessment that goes a long way in mapping out where these cartels operate. Now, there are a few states in the 48 that aren't, they don't have any, what you call it, cartel presence, or at least detectable. And, you know, but that would be way up north, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana type stuff. I think also Idaho. But for the most part, it's throughout, including Alaska and Hawaii. So it does affect what's going on here in the United States. And the part of about trying to present the information as to then you can have a better picture of the operations, who, the what, the where, the why, the when, and the how. And this is how things have changed here in Arizona that I am broadcasting from. And so consequently, I concentrate on the issues that are happening here. Now, there's a couple of websites that you can gather information from that pertain to the whole United States, and they're good sources. But in Arizona, they've been putting a lot of pressure on the cartels on the east and the west sides of the state, because that's where they had initially, a couple of years ago, in the Tucson sector, had a heavy presence working through Operation Stone Garden, a multi-jurisdictional task force with Sheriff's Department, the Police Department, the Border Patrol, the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, and pretty much pushed them out of these areas. And as the cartels are quick to adapt, they had started changing their tactics and going and finding new areas to infiltrate from. And so consequently, they had gone into more of the mountainous areas on the east side of Arizona, out between Tucson and the New Mexico border, and then also out towards the west side of Arizona, out in the Yuma and Gila Bend areas. And as the enforcement efforts have shifted into those areas, then it's collapsing back towards the middle in somewhere between Tucson and the west side, generally east of Gila Bend and west of Tucson. And that's where the new activity is coming in. There's been a lot of people trying to drive ones and twos across the border, or small quantities of drugs, sometimes very large quantities. And as those interdiction efforts are stepped up, then they keep trying different tactics. Sometimes it's hiked in on foot, sometimes it's smuggled in vehicles in hidden compartments, or commingled from imports that are being sent into the United States. And sometimes ultralight aircraft, catapults, air cannons, you name it. Sometimes on commercial flights, people will try to strap this stuff onto their bodies, whether it's the meth or the heroin, and then try to bring it in that way. So our first article here that we're going to cover here, and this is from insightcrime.org, and it's from the 14th of March, 2018, First Front Dissidents. The First Front Dissidents is the most important of the criminal groups comprised of ex-members of the now demobilized Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the FARC. The dissident group formed in July of 2016 when the First Front distanced itself from the FARC peace negotiations in Cuba. Currently estimated to have 400 members, the dissident group is led by ex-FARC commanders Nestor Gregorio Fernandez, alias Ivan Mordisco, and Miguel Boche Santillana, alias Gentil Duarte, and Ginor Garcia Molina, alias John 40. The group's activities are concentrated in three or four places that are hard to, Guavera, Bupes, Meta, and Vichada, where it controls drug trafficking routes established in the jungle in Guavera, reaching the borders of Brazil and Venezuela. The dissidents has focused on achieving control over criminal revenues, especially those from drug trafficking, but its relations with local communities has also become increasingly important. And then it goes into the history of that. It's an 11-page document, and that's just page one and two. So insightcrime.org, and it's the 14th of March, 2018, Front Dissidents, First Front Dissidents. The next one is from BorderlandBeat.com, and it's Dateline Veracruz, that's down on the Gulf of Mexico, on Mexico side, in country of Mexico. 22 March 2018, another journalist murdered, Gutierrez Zamora, Veracruz. During the night of Wednesday, March 21, journalist Leobardo Vasquez Altzin was murdered, who had worked for media such as Noreste, La Opinión de Poza, Ricarda Vanguardia de Veracruz, and who had recently opened a Facebook page called Enlace Regional Informative. The first inquiries indicate that he was in his home in the municipality of Gutierrez Zamora, where the lifeless body of the communicator was found, although the form of homicide has not been specified. Ana Laura Perez Mendoza, president of the State Commission of Care and Protection for Journalists, confirmed the murder of Leobardo Vasquez. got one more here, and then we'll try to get over here to a tad bit of our presentation of about the War of the Fleet. It's kind of hard to limit our information here on insurgency here on Liberty Tree Radio because of the limited time that we have broadcast here. But like I say, we've got multiple other blocks of time on other networks and other time frames. So if you're interested in some of the information that's been presented here on Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon, I encourage you to tune in to some of these other broadcasts. Operation Sandman leads to 204 arrests for human smuggling. CBP.gov/newsroom. Dateline 23 March 2018. Special Operations and Intelligence Border Patrol agents detected and apprehended 204 suspects near the Imperial Sand Dunes west of Yuma during a three-week Border Patrol operation between February and March. Agents from Yuma Sector Special Operations Detachment Intelligence Unit, along with El Centro Section's Intelligence Unit, apprehended 175 foreign nationals who illegally entered the United States near the Imperial Sand Dunes Recreational Area. 29 additional subjects, many United States citizens, were arrested for coordinating and facilitating human smuggling attempts. Several subjects attempted to evade apprehension by running or jumping into the irrigation canals and fleeing in vehicles. 19 vehicles involved were seized. Coordination, integration, and rapid adaptation are key elements of success in securing our nation's borders, said Yuma Sector Chief Patrol Agent Anthony J. Porvanik. The hardworking men and women in the operation significantly impact transnational criminal organizations exploiting our communities. Yuma Sector SOD is comprised of certified special operations agents from the Special Operations Group, the Border Patrol Search, Trauma, and Rescue Unit, and the Border Patrol Tactical Unit. Agents assigned to this unit undergo an intensive training regime before being certified SOD agents. Let's see, Yuma El Centro Intelligence are responsible for prioritizing, analyzing, and providing intelligence support through specialized teams and units that counteract terrorism and transnational crime. SIU ensures intelligence data collection processes ensuring U.S. Customs and Border Protection, U.S. Border Patrol objectives are achieved. Borderlandbeat.com, one more. And, of course, when I present this information, I'm going to go to the conclusion that the listeners to Liberty Tree Radio don't need a whole lot of editorialization on why these are being presented and to wonder why we're not hearing about some of these things, but we can hear all about President Trump and the Russians and what's going on in North Korea or China and the trade embargo and what's going on in Syria, but these things are boiling out of control just south of the border, and of course then we don't hear anything about this. Borderlandbeat.com, 23 March 2018, Wantahuto, 8 dead, 24 wounded in Peleke massacre. Guanajuato, on Wednesday night, March 21, armed persons broke into a hall that served as a clandestine Peleque named Peleque Bar, California, in the Colonia Carmen municipality of Parisma, where a cockfight was being fought and 8 people were killed, among them Alfredo Lopez, father of the municipal president of San Francisco del Rincon, Ishmael Lopez. The responding authorities found 6 dead and 2 more of the 24 injured in the attack died in the hospital where they were taken by paramedics who were forced to wait to respond because of the continued shooting. According to the local media this morning, an armed commando of men with high-powered guns arrived at the locale and started shooting. They were traveling in a van and by motorcycles. Debate headline, the pain of seeing family members dead after attack on Palenque. Seems I did see something as to where now the death toll has gone up to like 15, but that might be in another incident of what was occurring down in Mexico. So, see, we got only about 7 or 8 minutes left here on today's broadcast. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to tune in to Liberty Tree Radio. And it's vastly important that you become aware of what's going on, because one of the things that I've noticed over the years in the Patriot movement, that oftentimes people continuously do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And unfortunately, things never seem to get any better. It's just the same thing over and over again. People getting arrested, people getting killed. Well, let's try it again the same way, and it's the same thing over and over again. So if you're fed up with what's going on in this country, there are certain ways to. But also, the part of about insurgency, oftentimes people think that it has to be done with guns and bombs and hijackings, and oftentimes it just is part of about raising the awareness and getting a mass of people on your side, and to be able to affect change doesn't necessarily all have to go kinetic. When we left off the other day, we were talking about political and military objectives, about the war of the flea. Sometimes the insurgency has been termed that because it's the small against the large, the flea against the dog. Because what it boils down to is sometimes it's creating the climate of collapse, and about organization of the insurgent forces, and maybe even a little bit about Che Guevara on guerrilla war and talking about the base. Because the enemy advances, we retreat. The enemy camps, we harass. The enemy tires, we attack. The enemy retreats, we pursue. That's selective military writings of Mao Zedong. Also, it should be no surprise of where that came from. Because what Mao had been saying of guerrilla tactics, it's the key to communist thinking. And also, by the way, another misconception of about insurgency that had really started to emerge post-World War II, that somehow that insurgency was a strict purview of the communists. But once again, that's really not true. Because it can be discerned in guerrilla warfare tactics and the communist thinking and insurgency, because it can be discerned in diplomacy as well as in war. As the Soviet policymakers, they've mastered the Chinese lesson very well and apply it to a wide variety of problems having nothing to do with guerrilla fighting. Berlin, since World War II, has been a prime example. And the establishment of the Soviet missile bases in Cuba was another. But then, why not? Or the policy of hitting the enemy when he's weak, evading him when he is strong, taking the offensive when he falls back, and circling around when he advances. And all of those are only common sense. There's no great novelty in it, nor can the Marxist-Leninist camp claim any special credit for it. But what is new, and Mao is the apostle and the long Chinese revolution, the first proving ground, and that's the application of guerrilla activity as a conscious and deliberate way to specific political objectives without immediate reference to the outcome of the battle, provided only that the revolutionaries survive. Because oddly enough, it's the non-communist Cubans rather than the Chinese who have provided the most clear-cut example of the military activity producing political effects. in a war in which few of the battles would be described by military men as more than just skirmishes, yet one in which the government came crashing down as surely as if an enemy had been destroyed on the battlefield. And oftentimes, even currently, what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, but because the explanation seems to baffle military men, but yet it's simple enough. Guerrillas who know their trade and have popular support cannot be eliminated by the means available to most governments. And on the other hand, few governments can stand the political, psychological, and economic stresses of guerrilla war, no matter how strong they may be militarily. Now, in general, all warfare involves the same basic problem: how to use one's strength to exploit the enemy's weakness and so to overcome him. Because in an internal war, the government's strength is its powerful army, its arsenal, and its wealth of material means. Its weaknesses are social, political, and economic, in the sense that the economy, which is an asset, is vulnerable from several points of view, and it provides both military and psychological targets. Our constitutional democracies, whatever that is, are particularly exposed to the subversion that is the basic weapon of revolutionary war. And the stratified class structure and the multi-party political system of most countries are sources of political and social dissension that can be exploited. And constitutional law is a further embarrassment and sometimes may be a fatal impediment. Batista fell not because he was a dictator, but because his situation in a country with democratic institutions, a country almost entirely dependent on the favor of the United States with its similar institutions and traditions, did not permit him to be a dictator enough to resolve the contradictions that confronted him. His hands were tied by conventions he could not break without losing his foreign support. And his use of counterterrorism, that is the illegal use of force, only increased his domestic opposition. But yet without it, he had no effective means to combat the disorder and the subversion that threatened his regime. And similarly, the French in Indochina were destroyed in a final analysis by the very ideas and institutions that they have themselves had introduced. Franco, by ways of contrast, probably stands because he has successfully stifled the very idea of political liberty in Spain while putting enough bread on the table to satisfy the vocal majority. And this is to speak of legalistic, that is, social and political difficulties. But on the military level, a regular army, under whatever political system, has disadvantages that are owing to its very size and complexity of the organization. And then again, to its defensive role as the guardian of the national wealth and of the whole of the national territory. Now, the guerrilla, for his part, finds his strength in his freedom from territorial commitments, his mobility, and his relationship to a discontented people as the spokesman of their grievances, the armed vanguard, and as Che Guevara puts it, of militant social protest. Now, his weakness is merely, and I use the word advisedly, a military weakness. He lacks the aims and usually the manpower to risk a military decision. Now, in the circumstances, it's obvious what the guerrilla tactics must be. Politically, he must seek to aggravate such social and political dissension as exists and to raise the level of political consciousness and of the revolutionary will amongst the people. And it will also be part of his design, as well as the natural consequences of his action, to bring about an intensification of the political repression that already exists, as so deepening popular opposition to the regime and hastening the process of its dissolution. Militarily, the tactics are going to be designed to wear the enemy down by chipping away at the morale of the government troops and by inducing the maximum expenditure of the funds, the material, and the manpower in an effort to suppress him. And at the same time, he's going to endeavor to build his own forces through the capture of the government arms and by recruitment from an increasingly alienated populace, avoiding a military confrontation until the day, and it'll come late, when an equalization of force has been obtained. Now, I see we're about 3-4 minutes into the past top, so I kind of have a feeling here that we'll be wrapping up today's broadcast. But just remember, I'll be over on the Micro Effect tomorrow, or for the rest of the week also. So what we're trying to do is, I'm going under the assumption, and you know what happens when they say assume, that I'm talking to a new group of people here on Liberty Tree Radio that are not fully versed in some of the aspects of what insurgency is. So we're pointing out that it is an effective tactic. I guess it proved to be fairly effective right now in Afghanistan and Iraq. And so what we need to do is join together with the band, because we can either hang separately, or we can hang together, or we can continue to do the same thing over and over again, or expecting a different result, or to conduct a proper after-action review and identify what's going wrong and try to correct those problems. So I thank you for being with us today, and I'll see you back tomorrow. You guys take good care of yourselves. Don't get into any trouble. I need you tomorrow.